Well, tonight what we want to do is, if you look at the title of the lesson, it deals with the origin of religions around us. If you look at a chart, and I have this one here, just happen to have it up here, nice, pretty chart with all kinds of different colors to it, and it deals with the various religions in the world around us today. And you look at this chart, you find that there are a number of religions that we would call Christ-centered type religions. And that is, their belief has something to do with believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And while there may be disagreements among them, at least they have generally that in common. But then there are other religions that are very different than that. And so you look at the chart here, and I know the legend over here is kind of hard to read here. And so, but the first one here, the Roman Catholic Church, are the yellows. And so we see the concentration, and what this does is show you the areas where they are predominant in the world around us. And so basically, we look at that, we see, well, South America and Middle America there, and also parts of Europe, they're pretty, well, Catholic is predominant religion. And then the next one is the Protestant religion, and that is the one of the more orange here, and that's the South right here, is a big Protestant area. And I dare say probably they would include the Church of Christ in that, if you ask the people that comprise this list. And then also here in Canada, Australia, so you have that as predominant religion. And then over in this section here, it says Christians from other type of Christians. And so that's red here, the northeast and going out to the west, and also down here in the southern part of Africa and different spots here being that. And you just go all the way down here and you find that, for instance, you get down to this part right here, and this here would be the Mormons. And you may notice here that's very concentrated in that one area of the United States. They are predominant religion in that area. And then you have the Muslims, and these would be the Sunnis and Shiites that are divided there. So that's this area of Africa, North Africa, and the Middle East. So we have to talk about Iran, Iraq, being in that category of those people. And as you go on here, then you have green to be Jews, where they are predominant. I don't really find too many places that's for a reason. And then you find down here the Hindus, and also talks about that group of people of Buddhists, also kind of light green. So you have those people in this area of the world. And then also down here are going to be, basically, let me make sure I get that right here, they're going to be the Buddhists and then the Hindus. And so that kind of gives you an idea of where various religions are. You may notice over here in this part here, it says to us that basically there's no dominant religion. That'd be China and some parts of Russia. And so that's basically what that means. Of course, China's a country that has tried its best to squash religion, and their religion is a state, is what they try to do over there. And then finally, just simply the unpopulated areas. But that kind of tells you, as far as looking at this, you find that various parts of the world has different type of religions, is the idea here. And finally, this pile over here shows us what percentage of the world be, for instance, 17% Roman Catholic, 5.6% Protestants, and it goes on down. And down here, 19.8% are Muslims, and 23.3% are Hindus. And so that kind of gives you an idea of the percentage of people in the world around us that have those kind of religions. What we ought to do, though, is look at where they come from. Where do these various religions look at? We're not going to spend a whole lot of time with the outside source, but we want to look at what the Bible says as far as how religion developed in the Bible. And then go to some outside sources for just a little bit. And so we look here about this idea of origin. What we mean by that, and this dictionary.com, where I give this definition, says something which anything arises, or is derived from the source or fountainhead. We often talk about maybe a river is the fountain of the river, where it comes from. And that'd be the first existence of beginning of anything, the birth of something. And so we may talk about the idea of Bill Monroe is the origin or originator of bluegrass music. Or he may say that Dr. Naismith, back in whenever it was in Kansas, decided to put up two peach baskets in his gym and gave the young guys a ball, start shooting at that basket. He created basketball. And so he's the one that originated it. That's where it came from. And then also when you look at this, and define religion. And there it says, religion is a set of beliefs concerning the cause, nature, and purpose of the universe. In other words, where we came from, why we're here, how it came to be. It says, we consider it as the creations of a superhuman agency or agencies, usually involving devotional and ritual observances, and often containing a moral code of governing conduct of human affairs. And so it's the idea, again, of where we came from, but how we should act is basically the idea of religion. And also it says a specific fundamental set of beliefs and practices generally agreed upon by a number of persons or sect. For instance, the Christian religion, the Buddhist religion, they have their doctrine. They have their said beliefs that generally considering people that are Buddhists and people that are Christians can agree upon what that definition there says to us. And so we look at this here and we find in the Bible then, when God made man, God spoke specifically, directly to the heads of families. And so we ought to say, well, this is the patriarchal dispensation. Meaning, just what I just said, and that is that when God created Adam and Eve, that God talked directly to them. As you look through the Bible, we find that God spoke directly to Cain and Abel and Seth, to Noah and Abraham and other heads of families during that time period. And again, an example of what I'm talking about is, for instance, the sacrifices of Cain and Abel. When you look over in Genesis, the fourth chapter, 3 and 4, says, in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering through the ground of the Lord, and Abel also brought the firstborn of his flock and of their fat, and the Lord respected Abel and his offering. Then one may wonder, why is it that God accepted the offering of Abel and rejected the offering of Cain? Well, we have to look at the Bible and realize what God had done is he had told them exactly what he wanted them to offer. That he specified to them, told them again directly what he would accept. The Hebrew writer talking about this says, by faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained wisdom that he was righteous. God testified his gifts, and through it he being dead still speaks. Now somebody may say, what do you mean by faith, Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice? Where did he get that faith? Well, that word faith there refers to the idea, again, that God told Abel what to do. Over in Romans 10, verse 17, faith comes by hearing, hearing by the word of God. So when you put these passages together, what he finds, God told them what to sacrifice, and then in belief they made that sacrifice, or they didn't make the sacrifice. One of the two. Abel did what God said to do, Cain did not. And so that's the way God dealt with mankind during this time period. And as the patriarchal age, we read about them building altars. You find, for instance, talk about the life of Abraham. The number of times it tells us that he built an altar. And not only did he build an altar, but he offered a sacrifice to God. And again, all this would be according to what God said to do. And they would be their own priesthood during this time period. They were offering their sacrifices on behalf of themselves. And early in this time period, then, in the Bible, there's no other religions. God simply talked to the heads of families and telling them what to do. An example of that, and then not a whole lot is revealed to us about exactly how God dealt with everybody else, but we do know that God again spoke to them the same way as he did to Cain and Abel and Seth and Abraham and Noah. And in fact, we read about a man by the name of Melchizedek, and he's described to us being a priest and a king. In Genesis 14, verse 18, the Melchizedek king of Salem, that'd be Jerusalem, brought out bread and wine. He was a priest of God Most High. The Hebrew writer makes the point that we really don't have any knowledge of this man until Genesis 8:14, verse 18. And really after this event, that really we're not told anything else about him. He kind of appears and then disappears in time. But what that tells us is that God was dealing with Melchizedek, who was dealing with the king of the city of Salem, as recognizing their sacrifices and telling them what to do. So that's how God dealt with mankind during that time period. So therefore, all mankind was under law to God. And even afterward, when God gave the law to Moses, that the Gentiles, as they were called then, were still, God still dealing with them basically the same way during the patriarchal dispensation, during that time period. And that's why the Apostle Paul, in writing about the Gentiles, in Romans 2 verse 12, he says, "For as many as have sinned without law, lost perish without law." Understand what he's saying by the law, or the law here, is referring to the law of Moses. For anybody to sin, by definition, is a transgression of the law. And therefore he's saying that not that they didn't have any rules or regulations God gave them, but instead they didn't have the law of Moses. Therefore they weren't violating that law, but they were still sinning against God. And so as many as sinned in the law will be judged by the law, for not the hearers of the law are just in the sight of God, but the doers of the law will be justified. For when Gentiles do not have the law, again talking about the law of Moses, by nature do things in the law, though not have the law, are a law themselves. He showed the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness between themselves, their thoughts excusing them. So there's times they did what the law of Moses said, not because of their law, but because it was what was right, because of the moral compass, because of what God revealed earlier to them, that they should do or not do. And if we're men, the Gentiles had this time of period of, as we call it, the patriarchal dispensation. However, eventually what happened is that man started to deviate. And started to change what God said to do, and started creating his own religion. The very first time in the Bible you read about idols or gods deals with this passage here in Genesis 31st chapter. And the background of this passage is that Jacob had gone and worked for Laban, had married Rachel and Leah, and also had the two handmaids and had family there. And eventually, Jacob decided to go back home. He wanted to leave, and so he took his wives, his children, his livestock, and left without telling Laban what he's doing. And in the process of that, Rachel took the household idols. Jacob didn't know about it, but Laban chases after him, and partly because of idols. So in Genesis 31, verse 19, it said, "Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols, which were her father's." With him, and goes on down here, because at first Jacob is upset because he feels as if he has been wrongly accused of stealing the household idols. And so this is why he tells Laban. He says, "With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you. For Jacob does not know that Rachel has stolen them." And so this is an idea. Again, he was unaware that they had taken the gods, but he knew the gods existed. He knew that the idols existed. And so man had already started to create his own god and his own idols. And so we read in the Bible that various people had their idols, that Mesopotamia area that Abraham came out of, that they had their idols in that part of the world. That the people of Cain had various idols also. That Joshua, when he gives the passage in Joshua 24th chapter, about choosing who they would serve, he knows verse 15, it says, "If it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of Amorites whose land you dwell, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And so he's talking about, you don't choose the gods on the other side of the river, talking about the area of the Euphrates River, or the god of the land that we're going into, the gods of the people of that land, the land of Canaan. He said, so we see here that all these folks had their various gods. And in fact, way back up a little bit, we find that Egypt had their various gods. It's been said that the 10 plagues that God sent upon Egypt, each one was actually against a various god of the Egyptians. They had the god of the sun, the God of the river, the Nile River. They had the God of livestock and the God of cattle. And so when we read about those plagues, we're finding God actually showing them that he is more powerful than their supposed gods. Over in Exodus 12, chapter verse 12, that God said, "Where I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt, I will execute judgment. I am the Lord." We can almost emphasize there, I am the only Lord. I am the only God. What God is wanting them to recognize and understand in this passage. And then also we read about the other nations around. The nations Israel passed through on the way to Canaan had their various gods also. In Deuteronomy 29, verse 17, it says, "He saw their abominations and their idols, which were among them, wood and stone and silver and gold." So man just basically went out there and started creating all these various gods that they were going to worship. And as we read through the Bible, we find different names attached to them. For instance, Baal. And so a lot of times there's Baal used, but Baal and then another name attached to it. In other words, maybe Baal Hezron, our particular area, as they worship their sun god, who was Baal. And so they sometimes gave him kind of different names. We have Molech. Now Molech was a deity of the Ammonites, and he was a very vicious god, in fact, as we read about. In Leviticus 18, verse 21, it says, "You shall not let any of your descendants pass through the fire to Molech, nor shall you profane the name of your Lord. I am the Lord your God." No, sir. In their search to their god Molech, they actually made him a sacrifice. And that's what it means there to pass through fire, to actually kill their children, sacrifice their children in search to that god. Interestingly enough, I tried to do a little research on this Molech. And he's also referred to as Milcom sometimes in the Bible. And while I read about the sacrifices, I really don't find what he's the god of. In other words, what particular thing he was supposed to do for the people. But yet they served him, they worshiped after him. And then we have Remphan, the god of Saturn, is talked about in the Bible also. And what these have in common is that every religion basically had their own priesthood. People that would appeal to the god on behalf of the people or act as intermediary between the people and the god. And they had their altars they would build. A lot of times we read about the high places. When you look through the Bible, the Old Testament, you'll notice they talk about they went to sacrifice in the high places. What that means is they built the altars on top of the hills, supposedly so the gods would be near them and they'd be near the gods to make those sacrifices. And of course they had various sacrifices that they offered to their gods also, is what they did on those occasions. And as they did that, we also find the Bible talks about other type of religions where, for instance, like the idea of astrology. Looking to the stars as forces of good or evil in man's life and seeing what the stars will tell you to do. Today, people talk about horoscopes. And some people, I don't know who would do it with any logic behind it, but some people actually think the stars will tell them whether to get out of bed or whether to make investments or what to do that day. Well, they took it to another level. They actually thought the stars would do things for them, do things to them. Witchcraft and soothsaying and divination are all basically the same idea. Appealing to some kind of outside power to tell you and help you do things is what all these things had in common. Now, in fact, we read about Pharaoh. Again, in Exodus 7, verse 11, it said, "But Pharaoh also called the wise men and the sorcerers, so the magicians of Egypt, they also did it in like manner with their enchantments." Trying to outdo Moses, what they're trying to do here. And so they had their people they would call together. Nebuchadnezzar had his sorcerers and his astrologers when he had his dream in Daniel's second chapter and tried to tell him what that dream meant. And so all these people had those kind of people around them. But then we look at the Bible, we find, okay, now that's the various forms of worship, but the law of Moses. Read about that in the Bible also. And the law of Moses, of course, given basically in Exodus around the 20th, 21st chapter, when we start have that code actually given to the children of Israel. And Moses referred to as the lawgiver. And so God spoke directly to Moses and later on through other prophets also. And in that law, we talk about the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not have other gods. Thou shalt not make molten images and all the thou shalt not, but also the things they are to do. And then you had the various statutes, how those commandments would be applied also in our lives. And one of the things, of course, that God said was, you cannot have any other gods. Not only can you not have any gods, you can't even have images. You can't even have images representing me. I don't want you to make anything saying, this is our God or this represents me. I don't want that. Again, he did not want them thinking in terms of idolatry, because that's what idolatry is. It's the idea of thinking somehow you can make an image, and that represents the God that you're serving. And so, look here, we find that part of the reason to do this because we understood that this would have an effect on Israel. In fact, Israel eventually did start serving other gods, both Israel, the northern 10 tribes, and southern 2 tribes. But I want you to notice here what God said about northern Israel when they were about ready to be carried off captivity. The 2 Kings, the 17th chapter, is the end of those northern 10 tribes. And he says about them, he says, for so was the children of Israel sinned against the Lord their God. He had brought them up out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. They had fed and feared other gods and had walked in the statutes of the nations whom the Lord had cast out from before the children of Israel and of the kings of Israel which they had made. Also the children of Israel secretly did against the Lord their God things that were not right, and had built for themselves high places in all their cities, from one tower to fortified cities. They set for themselves sacred pillars and wooden images on every high hill under every green tree. There they burned incense in all the high places, like the nations whom the Lord had carried away before them. And they did wicked things to provoke the Lord to anger. For they served idols, of which the Lord had said to them, you shall not do this thing. Yet the Lord testified against Israel and against Judah by all his prophets, every seer, saying, turn from your evil ways, keep my commandments and my statutes, according to the law which I commanded your fathers, and which I sent to you by my servant the prophets. And finally here, as you look at verse 14, it says, nevertheless they will not hear, but stiffened their necks like the necks of their fathers who did not believe in the Lord their God. And they rejected his statutes and his covenant he had made with their fathers. And his testimonies which he had testified against them, they followed idols, became idolaters, went after the nations who were all around them, concerning whom the Lord had charge of them, they should not do like them. So they left all the commandments of the Lord their God, made for themselves a molten image and 2 calves, made a wooden image and worshiped all the host of heaven and served Baal. And they caused their sons and daughters to pass through the fire, practiced witchcraft and soothsaying, and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. Therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them from his sight. There was none left but the tribe of Judah alone. It should be noted that as you read this passage, that of course this is about 100 years before Judah was carried off captivity also. But just read through that passage there, and you find God noticed that part of what was happening is that they wanted to be like everybody else. They wanted the religion to be the religion of the people around them, and therefore they started copying them. And that's one of the reasons God said, don't marry their children of the land, people in the land around you. But that's what they did. They fought after the other gods. But then as you go on in the Bible, again, this is just kind of a survey of the various religions we find in the Bible. Eventually, the New Testament, the Samaritans. And the origin of the Samaritans goes back to the Old Testament. Well, Omri, the king of Israel, bought a hill, basically a mountain, and built a city there and called it Samaria, and became the capital of the northern 10 tribes, Samaria. And what happened is that when the children of Israel were carried out of captivity off that land, that Assyria brought in people from other parts of the world to inhabit Canaan in, that area of the northern 10 tribes who lived in. There are a few Jews there left behind, but most of the people were brought in from other nations. And what God did is he sent lions to start eating up the people. And so they got the idea that the God of the land was not happy. So they brought back a Jewish priest to teach them about the God of that land there. And what happened, though, was that you had a cross, basically, teaching of various gods mixed in with the true God of Israel. And so they had some knowledge of God, but it was again diluted with a lot of idolatry. That's why in the New Testament, when you read about the Jews, how they hated the Samaritans, is they saw them as totally apostate. And didn't want to have a thing to do with them, because they recognized they were not serving the true God of Israel. And again, they had the worship of gods, but also they understood there was the God of the land. That there was something about this God that was different. But they really did not accept the God of the Bible. And so that's what I'm reading about. Now, as you look at that chart I had for you earlier, there's other religions we read about also. For instance, and not in the Bible, we find, for instance, the Buddhist. And the origin of Buddhism goes back about 560 B.C. And as you look at that religion, it means to wake up or to know. It's the idea to learn something, the idea of being enlightened. In fact, Buddha means the enlightened one or the awakened one. That's what that word actually means. And the four principles of Buddhism are these right here. It's the knowledge of suffering, the origin of suffering, destruction of suffering, and removal of suffering. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that it really concentrates on suffering, doesn't it? And that is, okay, how do we know we're suffering? Where does it come from? How do we get out of it? How do we stop it? That's the whole idea of Buddhism. And as you look at this religion, it denies the existence of God. It denies that, and basically it says the world evolved by natural powers, kind of like the first evolutionists, I guess you call them. They just believe it came here because of nature. And law is not by divine command. In other words, we don't have God, so we don't have divine law either. And all is God, and God is all. In other words, everything that you want to think of as God, that's what God is, and God's in everything we look around at. And therefore, truth is totally subjective. It's truth to you. It's whatever you think the truth is. And they believe in reincarnation. You don't come back in the next life after you die. You'll come back as something else. Another religion we read about a lot around it today is Hinduism. And it's often called perhaps one of the oldest religions in the world, 1500 B.C. And Hinduism, there's 600 million people that are Hindus. Now again, that's a big chunk of world population right there. And what's astounding about that, we have 600 million people are Hindus, but you have 330 million gods. In other words, everything basically to Hindu is God. They classified everything. And a combination of various beliefs, they don't really have one particular doctrine. There's not a book of Hindu, for instance, that all the Hindus said, that's our Bible, that's our code of ethics. They don't have that. It's a combination of all the different writings of all those who claim to be Hindus. As you look at this here, they also have what's called the caste system. And the caste system says, if you're born rich, then you don't stay rich, and the rich are not supposed to help the poor people. If you're born poor, then that's where you need to be. And the reason you were born poor is because in your earlier life, you were a bad person. And you need to suffer now so the next time you die and then are reincarnated, you'll come back in a better station of life. And so they don't try to help the poor people. They don't try to help one another in that society. They believe that's where you need to be. And so they have the caste system. That kind of tells you about the various religions around us. And I try to do that, hopefully not too fast, but try to just give you the highlights about the various religions that we read about. But as we read about these religions, there are certain things they do have in common. One is animism, and that is the natural phenomenon and objects are alive and have souls. Hindus, Buddhists, the people we read about in the Bible, they believe the river was of God and had a soul. The trees have souls. The rocks have souls. The cows have souls. And so they believe everything that's alive, even inanimate objects, again, have souls. Not only that, but also pantheism then goes along with that. And that is, God's not a person, but all the laws and forces of nature makes of God. And sometimes people talk about Mother Nature. And they kind of elevate Mother Nature to the point that Mother Nature is a God. Well, that's the kind of way they look at it, that we don't have a person, but we simply have the forces of nature being the God, if you would. And then also polytheism. And that is belief in worship of many gods. By definition, again, if everything's God, then you don't have just one God. That's how the Hindus have 300 million gods. And not only that, but also Hinduism, theism, and that is you have all these various gods, but there's one chief god over all the other gods. Now, there's some things that are peculiar about some of the religions. For instance, we know about the Greeks. And they believed Zeus was their main god, and all the other gods were inferior to him. And therefore, in the New Testament, we read about the paganism, the idolatry of the first century. They wouldn't have had as much problem with Christianity if Christianity had said, well, Jehovah is the chief god, and all the other gods were lesser gods. They would have accepted that a lot more quickly than the teaching there's only one God. And so, this here is what they may believe. And then agnosticism, and that is that God is unknowable and unknown and unknowable. We really don't know who God is. We really can't know what he wants us to do. That's why, again, you're trying to figure out what's going on with all these various gods around us. And then I'll just throw in for a good measure also atheism and humanism, and that is the idea that man has outgrown the need for God. It's a religion today that we're seeing. That we don't need a God. We are our own gods. As a lot of people talk about it. I want to leave you with one final thought, and that is, okay, what's the results of, what's the effects of these religions? As read about in the Bible, one is that they breed superstition. Anytime you reject the Bible, anytime you reject the truth, man is led to try to figure it out for himself. And what happens is he makes up stories and starts making up his own ideas and all his own theories. And so we read, for instance, Ezekiel 21, verse 21. And this is talking about the king of Babylon. As he's going to go out and attack. And there's two cities. He's at crossroads. How does he decide which city to go after? Well, it says, for the king of Babylon stands at the parting of the road. At the fork of the two roads, he uses divination. He shakes the arrows. He consults the images. He looks at the liver. In other words, does he make the decision based on which city is most important to him? Which one has the best defense? Which one he could conquer the easiest? It doesn't make a decision based on that. He makes it by, we would say sometimes, kind of like flipping a coin. Or cutting an animal open and having a priest look at the liver and having the liver tell him which way to go. All superstition again. What they're doing by it. And not only that, but also human sacrifices. Was, again, common in many of these religions. The sacrifice ones, even children or various people of that society, was very common. Immoral conduct. You realize that to a lot of people, religion and morality are not co-joined together. That a lot of people see the two as separate. In fact, in many of these religions, morality had nothing to do with it. It wasn't about being good or being nice. It was about what their God said to do and what they could get by with. And so many of these societies, you had immoral conduct, even a servitor of God. And then you had human suffering. That even those maybe had not sacrificed children are still being bound by laws and regulations that put a burden on them. And therefore they were suffering needlessly. And finally, people being lost for eternity was the end result of all this. No matter how strongly they believe these things, no matter how... And, you know, if you take your child and you sacrifice to your God, that person really believes it. You find people today that when they put a bomb on their body or they have put a bomb on their wife or on their child and they have them go and explode and blow themselves up so as to kill some enemy and serve for God, they really believe it. But that doesn't make it true. And what it says to us that those people will be lost. Jesus did not say, I am one of many ways, or I am part of the truth, or I'm a truth that you can choose if you so desire. But Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And so therefore, that's what we have today, is simply the truth as God revealed it to us. And so hopefully in our study here, and what we want to do in the next lesson, is really look at Christianity. About the origin of Christianity itself. How do we know? it came from God. How we know it's the true religion? Or are we simply following after our religion like the Hindus follow after their religion or the Buddhists follow after their religion? It's what we're going to look at. I appreciate greatly your kind attention tonight. What we want to do, we have a song selected now to encourage you, if you're not a Christian, to obey the gospel of Christ, as we have here, number 330, just as I am. And so tonight, if we can aid you,